Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We begin this hour 25 years out from the fall of the Soviet Union. The U.S. is consumed with domestic concerns and worried about terrorism overseas or on the ground. Europe is also preoccupied with the migrant crisis and its stagnant economy. The countries on the border with Russia, well, they're afraid.
Belarus, it's a communism with a taste of cappuccino. On the same street in downtown of Minsk, you can see McDonald's, and in front of McDonald's, a monument of Lenin. All the maneuvers of Russian army are happening in Belarus, especially this brigade, which occupied Crimea. It was training always in Belarus. So let's say Belarus is independent, but if NATO and the West will not be doing anything, it will be just a new dungeon for Putin expansion to Europe.
That's Frank Viacorka, a Belarusian youth activist and journalist who visited us at the Takeaway this spring. Across the Black Sea, there's talk of this creeping of Russian activity, a new radar station in occupied Crimea, shadow troops in Belarus, Russian spy ships in the Black Sea. If push came to shove, Frank says,
if you ask 16 years old boy in Minsk, who are you? He will definitely tell, I'm Belarusian. And if you will ask him with whom you want to be, he will definitely choose European Union, the Western society. But of course, there is a big conflict with the older post-Soviet generation who still supporting Moscow policy. And if they will have choice, they will be voting for Putin.
So Richard Sheriff, former deputy commando of NATO between 2011 and 2014, wants all the members of Europe and NATO, including the United States, to adopt a tone of warning to Russia. Otherwise, a preoccupied and disengaged NATO, he believes, is on a crash course with Russia. And that means war. So Richard joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
What is the mission of NATO in your view right now?
NATO's task under Article 5 of the Washington Treaty is to defend the member states of NATO. Collective defense, an attack on one is an attack on all. And in a sense, the purpose of the book is to highlight the importance of that.
And Latvia is a crucial part of NATO today in the same way that NATO understood its member states 25 years ago?
Absolutely. The three Baltic states of Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, small, proud, very brave states, fought against, achieved their independence and liberty from the Soviet Union 25 years ago. They are honorable and committed members of the alliance, and they deserve absolutely the collective defense that the alliance guarantees to them.
I'm puzzled, though. Europe can barely conceal its contempt for Greece and Turkey at this point. Why do we believe it's going to defend Latvia?
Well, because they're NATO allies. It's as simple as that. The commitment of the NATO alliance is total. They are members of the alliance, and as I say, it's within the terms, the founding principle of the alliance is collective defence, and that means extending that defence to all NATO allies under threat. And I would also add that Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania have shown a remarkable commitment to the alliance since they joined. Their soldiers fought and died alongside American soldiers, alongside British soldiers in Afghanistan, and they absolutely deserve our support.
Donald Trump says NATO is irrelevant in our time, outmoded. What's your response?
I would say that is pretty well wide of the mark. NATO is an alliance that has served the West well. It's built on principles of liberty, democracy, the rule of law. It defended the West during the years of the Cold War under American leadership. It remains as relevant today as it has done in the past. Of course it needs to adapt. Of course it needs to change. But I'm confident that we'll see at the Warsaw Summit coming up the sort of announcements we need that highlight the importance of deterrence and ensuring that peace remains in Europe.
What are those announcements that you believe will restore deterrence? Because certainly deterrence is not what we would call Vladimir Putin in occupying Crimea, in his dealings with Georgia, etc.
Yeah, well, exactly. You highlight the danger of the dynamic that Putin started with the invasion of Crimea, Ukraine. And that's why 2017 war with Russia highlights the dangers that we're standing into. What needs to happen is that the bar needs to be raised so high, or at least sufficiently high, that any potential adversary recognizes it is simply not worth the risk of one Russian soldier stepping a foot across the boundaries of NATO.
Are you suggesting we go back to the Warsaw Pact trigger in the Cold War, which suggested that a nuclear response would come if the troops moved across the Warsaw Pact border?
I'm suggesting that what we need is effective deterrence, and that involves, of course, conventional and nuclear. I would highlight the importance, though, of matching our adversaries with conventional capability, because if you don't have strong conventional forces, the result of that is that your first recourse has to be to nuclear, and that would be catastrophic. I would also add that this is particularly dangerous because the Russians hardwire nuclear thinking into every aspect of their defense doctrine. And the purpose of this book is to ensure, really, that the events I outline in 2017 War for Russia remain the pages of fiction rather than become reality.
So it sounds to me that you're saying to prevent the war scenario that would come from Putin thinking that there is an opening here requires the U.S. to and NATO to put essentially comparable conventional forces on the borders of the Baltic states, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, plus not rule out a use of nuclear weapons on Russian territory should Vladimir Putin move. What makes you think that Cameron and whoever the U.S. president is are going to go there?
Well, firstly, on the nuclear issue, we know that NATO remains a nuclear alliance. The nuclear capabilities, principally of the United States, but also Britain and France as well, remain the ultimate guarantor of peace.
Putin doesn't believe that.
Well, I think there is enough uncertainty. The fact is that as we're talking now, the nuclear deterrence is at sea, somewhere underwater around the world, and there's enough uncertainty in the mind of any potential adversary to deter.
What's the evidence of that uncertainty? What's the evidence that, I mean, I look at Putin's face, I don't see any uncertainty on
well,
question of nuclear.
I think there's enough, and I think that's why you need conventional capability as well. And if I can just turn to that, what is needed is not necessarily to match the Russian capability. I don't believe we're in the business of returning to, for example, to the Cold War levels of commitment from the United States and other allies that we saw in West Germany, for example, during the Cold War. But we need enough, and that means enough that is, in simple terms, that is capable, that is joined up, that would present enough of a war-fighting challenge to Putin to make him realize that it's simply not worth his while putting a foot across the Russian border.
And Putin is going to be humbled by such a statement at the moment that Britain is contemplating Brexit and a backing away from its European commitments?
Well, the answer to that is no. These are member states of NATO. NATO is duty-bound to defend them. This is no more, no less than you or I putting a lock on our house or a security light up to guard our property. Added to which, I would add that I think the Russians respect strength and they despise weakness. So this is NATO showing that it's prepared to step up to the mark. On the issue of Britain's commitment, my personal view is that Britain leaving the European Union would result in a weaker European Union. It would be like taking a brick out of the wall. So I am hoping, of course, that Britain remains in the European Union because the security challenges Europe faces are so multidimensional, so complex, that it's not as simple as saying just military power is required.
We're talking with Sir Richard Sheriff, who was the deputy commander of NATO between 2011 and 2014. We're talking about his book, 2017 War with Russia. I know you don't speak for NATO, but in your experience with NATO, doesn't the organization have a bit of a credibility problem in its dealings with the United States regarding Iraq and particularly Afghanistan, which I think it's fair to say was not a successful military mission, even though one can argue that it might have been worse had NATO not gone in there. But again, the question of whether al-Qaeda is in Afghanistan or not is the strategic question. And, you know, I think that's sort of a wash at this point. When Putin looks at NATO, he sees a puppet of the United States.
Yeah, I think the NATO mission in Afghanistan, and I would beg to differ on this, I think actually what we saw was the alliance coming together, 28 nations plus 22 partner nations from as far afield as Australia, New Zealand, Finland, Sweden, even Mongolia, coming together to implement a strategy which by the end of 2014 had achieved its aim of being able to pass on security to the Afghan security forces. Now, of course, the future of Afghanistan continues to depend on the commitment of the international community. So I think the credibility of NATO there was pretty good. Where I think you have a very important point is the issue of the willingness of European nations to step up to the mark in terms of funding defence. And I think there it is critical that European members of NATO really understand the importance of putting their weight, putting their money where their mouth is in essential terms, and not depending on the United States to foot the bill.
So you would support Donald Trump's suggestion that NATO nations pay more for their defense?
I would say that the promise made by NATO, the rather lame promise made by NATO nations at the end of the last NATO summit in Wales in 2014, that they would try to raise defence spending to 2% of GDP within 10 years, is simply not good enough.
You know, Sir Richard Sheriff, I have to say, as I listen to you and listen to the tone in your voice, it really takes me back to the 1980s. I mean, this idea of almost, you know, like Montgomery. This feeling of mission and preparedness and projection of strength that comes from your voice. You hear the European rhetoric now. You hear what's coming out of the United States. How are you going to infect the leaders of Europe with some of your esprit de corps, sir?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is all about, I think you put your finger on it. This is about leadership, and it's about stepping up to the mark. And in a sense, the story of the book is the story of how this sense of defeatism can be turned around by the leadership of an individual. I'm not going to give the story away, but on this occasion, it's not so much cometh the hour, cometh the man, but cometh the hour, cometh the woman, in the form of the President of the United States.
Sir Richard Sheriff, Deputy Commander of NATO between 2011 and 2014. His new book is 2017, War with Russia. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.